are you taking? Sad 2, Mari Lurie interviewing Gertrude Kaplan. Would you like to continue telling us about that year when your husband was away?
I was a substitute teacher at Heron Hill Junior High School when I was sent to a subnormal group. Bernard McCormick, who subsequently became the superintendent of schools of the Board of Public Education in Pittsburgh, who had known me as a student at Chenley when he was a teacher. He was the vice principal. And he called me in. I was 21, maybe 22. And he called me into the office and said, "Gert, this is a difficult group. They've had 5 substitutes in 2 days. And we know that just maintaining discipline is going to be a problem. Do the best you can and feel free to use us and support and so forth." So I picked out the ringleader in the class, whom I well remember to this day, young fellow who was close to 16, even though it was 8th grade, by the name of Stanley. And I really did try to befriend him, and I thought I did. And I remained there from March until the end of the school year with one very, very traumatic incident. I don't know if you want me to get into it or not.
Certainly.
This is 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a predominantly black school with mm-hmm. some very wonderful youngsters, black youngsters, who I had no prejudice in me whatsoever. I'd gone to Chenley High School, which was maybe a third at that time black community, and had many friends in the community. And many of the teachers and counselors at Heron Hill were black and were just as frustrated by the difficult students, by the obstreperous ones. But I was doing well. I, in fact, was told after I got in there that the teacher whom I was replacing was in charge of the safety squad, which was really the difficult extracurricular assignment in the school, supposedly maintain discipline in the cafeteria, in the halls, in the gymnasium, and so forth. So that was part of the activity. Stanley, whom I befriended, decided one morning during homeroom before class to light a cigarette. And all the other youngsters, "Mrs. Kaplan, teacher, teacher, Stanley's lighting a cigarette." I remember it vividly. So I, of course, began to cajole Stanley. "Stanley, you know, we don't do this in the building. If you have to have that cigarette, go out to the playground now, or wait till recess, but please don't continue to smoke it in here, whatever." This was the point at which he decided to buck the teacher, and he wasn't going to snuff the cigarette. I began to walk up the center aisle in the room toward him, and he began to come out of his aisle, and as he approached me, out came a switchblade knife.
Goodness.
At my chest. And I said to myself, "If ever you employed the gift of gab, Gertrude, now's the time to do it. Talk him out of this, cajole him out of this." And of course, I had one of the youngsters run down to the office to get the principal. And this is what I did. You know, we're friends. You and I have a relationship. We have a feeling. I've counted on you and all that. Enough to deflate him. I told the story recently to a friend, a comparative stranger, and he said to me, "All you had to say, Gertrude, was, 'May I have a cigarette? I'll join you, Stanley.'" But I had never smoked a day in my life, and it never occurred to me. I said, "Why weren't you there then to tell me?" Never occurred to me. I never smoked. In fact, I made a point of not smoking when I was doing all this work at the Y Playhouse, where they ate cigarettes backstage, and I couldn't stand it. Oh, that's a digression. Well, I got down to Mr. McCormick's office. You said, "Was that year painful?" I had just received a letter from Paul that he was going to Normandy. Mm-hmm. And he was there D-Day plus 6. And it was tremendous anxiety and concern. So I am not a hysterical person, I'm remembering it now vividly, said to Mr. McCormick, I don't need this, my husband's at the front, etc., etc. Ties in the two. He was dear. He said, you most certainly don't need this. He said, but I want to tell you. He said, you have stuck it out where nobody else has. And if you do, you're going to write your ticket, your own ticket with the Pittsburgh Board of Public Education. And apparently his words rang true. I wanted to teach summer school. I taught high school English at Allegheny Summer School, which was a plum job that summer. And then they sent me to Peabody High School, which was a very prestigious assignment for a 22-year-old. I didn't realize it was a permanent contract. It was. And it was lovely. I rubbed shoulders with some very bright, fine teachers, educators.
Anybody in particular that you'd like to mention?
Well, there was one woman, Rose Levin Smith. I think she's still living. She was in commercial ed. And Rose Levin Smith, together with the late Florence Reisenstein, were both very instrumental in the development of NEED. At the very beginning, you know what NEED is, of course, Negro Emergency Educational Drive. And the principal was Dr. D. Edwin Miller, and he was a love of a man. I did not know, the board had not told me that this was a permanent assignment. I presumed when they told me to go that it was just a substitute day early in the semester. And in those days when nylons were scarce, we used lake makeup, if you remember. So I had lake makeup and a very sexy black and yellow linen dress and went into the school. And the secretary said to me, Dr. Miller wants to see you, Mrs. Kaplan. I thought, that's strange. They don't usually interview substitutes. Went into his office and I met him. And he said, you're younger than I thought you were. And I said, 21 and 22. And he said, your husband's overseas, and began to interrogate me. And I thought, what is this? And then it dawned on me, and I said, Dr. Miller, is this a permanent assignment? He said, yes, didn't they tell you? I said, no, I'm really delighted. I said, but if they had told me, and I crossed a leg rather flirtatiously and said, I would have worn stockings. Well, we became very fast friends. He was dear, sympathetic, wanted to know about Paul, solicitous, and in fact, when Paul came home the following spring and I wanted to leave school, he understood so that I could meet him in New York. He was quite a friend.
Could we retrace steps?
Yes.
Because we'll pick up when your husband comes home.
All right.
But let's go back to college after you left high school.
Mm-hmm. I loved my days at Pitt. Adored them.
You went directly to Pitt.
On an honor scholarship. I had a scholarship also to Vassar, and I could have gone to Carnegie Tech School of Drama with a partial scholarship. But I was a really very realistic young lady. This was Depression time, and my parents were modest people. And I felt that I had to prepare myself to be self-supporting. And though I adored theater and wanted to pursue it, I knew that if I went to Carnegie Tech, the next step would be New York. At least it seemed to me the sequence. And a difficult trail. And maybe I wasn't sufficiently driven. Maybe my motivation was not that intense. But I was happy at Pitt. Had a wonderful, wonderful college career. And there I was in everything. Literally every extracurricular activity, besides Pitt players. I worked all through Pitt. I tutored a blind boy. This was a work-study program for me. I was not a member of sorority because if you were on a work-study program, you were not allowed. And I just didn't have the money. And frankly, it didn't bother me one bit. I found I didn't want to be categorized as a superficial sorority girl. I like being a GDI, goddamn independent, which I had always been. Had you never heard that?
No.
Well, that's very
like
uniquely
that.
American. You knew it, didn't you? You didn't know GDI? Goddamn independent.
We've both been something.
All right. I was senior court and senior queen nominee and Hall of Fame and all the lovely. I graduated from Pitt with honors.
What year?
June 41. Graduated high school Feb 30. I made Pitt in 3.5 years.
And your degree?
Was in a BA. With the, it was actually a double major, mm-hmm. education and English. I got enough education credits to teach.
And from there you went?
I was hired actually in April of that year, when teaching jobs were not to be found that easily. I guess I was lucky. Mm-hmm. By Dr. Cyril Sarver, the principal of the Hampton Township School District in Allison Park, Pennsylvania. That was my first teaching assignment. I was 19, and I was head of the English department. They were just growing. The year that the school was just really adding the junior and senior years, the year I came in. And he said to me, "Miss Foreman, you know," he said, "you're going to direct the class play." I said, "Yes." And he said, "You're going to direct the Christmas show." I was the only Jew in the whole school. There wasn't another Jew on the faculty. There wasn't a Jewish student.
Were you aware of your Jewishness?
Oh, very much so. I said to Dr. Sarver, who was a dear friend, "You know, Dr. Sarver, I'm perfectly willing to do whatever is within my assignment, but you realize I'm a Jewess." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, yes, but that doesn't mean you can't direct the Christmas play."
Did you meet with any prejudice at all?
No. No. My name was Foreman. Mm-hmm. I was blonde. I don't know that, interestingly enough, as I think about it, we sent our younger daughter, Robbie, to the North Carolina School of the Arts, and she was the only Jew there that first year of the organization of the school, and she did meet with people looking for her horns. I didn't have that feeling at all.
That's interesting.
And I had worked all through with blacks and non-Jews in all of my playground work, mm-hmm. McGee Playground, Garfield Playground. These were not Jewish milieu.
Right.
This was black, this was Irish, Polish, you know, and I really didn't. However, when I taught in Denver, I met with a tremendously not so subtle prejudice on the part of the principal of East High School. Do you want to hear about it?
Certainly, because this is
here too. I was sent as a sub, and to my amazement, the principal came into the class. It was an English class. At East High, which was, I'd say, comparable to Alderdice, a large Jewish population, a fine school academically, well-established school. And he observed me, and I thought, what's he doing observing a sub, you know? Came up to me afterwards and said, "Your name's Kaplan." And I said, "Yes." However, I said, "We spell it with a C." He said to me, "Why do you say that?" I said, "Well, I've discovered, living in Denver, there is an eminent economist, Professor A.D.H. Kaplan, with a K, mm-hmm. who actually had been a member of President Roosevelt's Brain Trust, had a national reputation, and everywhere I went in Denver, people would say to me, "Are you related to?" So I was busy explaining, "No, I'm from the East, I'd like to be related, I'm not his daughter, niece, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "This is why I spell my name for you, Dr. Hill." His name was Hill. And he nudged me with his elbow and he said, "And the Jews spell it with a K." And I remember responding rather rapidly. Sometimes you think of the answer later, you know, so often. I said, "Dr. Hill, I don't know why you came in to observe me. Certainly you don't know my credentials. I'm not from Denver. But I am a Jewess and very proud of it." And he wanted to hire me, wanted to give me a full-time contract, which I couldn't take. And in all honesty, I said, that would not be fair to the school district. Sure enough, in February of that year, Paul was transferred to Camp Phillips in Salina, Kansas, so that was the end of that.
So you went to live in Kansas?
8 miserable weeks in Kansas. He was confined to quarters. It was winter.
Mm-hmm.
What year
was that?
44. The population was swollen from 25,000 to 125,000. Oh, talk about Jewishness. Here we go again. Couldn't find a place even. We didn't know how long we'd be there. Even a room and a bath. Weren't allowed to stay in hotels longer than 2 nights. So I said to Paul, "Don't worry about it. I'll keep moving the car. We'll go to one hotel to the next, you know, what happens." And I began to look at rooms and baths where people were so crowded, where the cabbage and the corned beef was all mixed with ooze. Then somebody said to me, go to the newspapers before they hit the street to see if there's a room for rent. Nothing there. One of the men at the newspaper office took compassion of me and possibly thought I wasn't a Jewess and said, you know, there's a wonderful minister at the Presbyterian Church who sometimes finds housing for officers and their wives. Paul was a captain. Why don't you go to Reverend so-and-so? So I did. I called, made an appointment. And I explained my plight. And I said, I realize you're overwhelmed with these requests. You know, the usual pattern. He said to me, Mrs. Kaplan, I wish I could help you. I don't know where to turn for a room to live. And I'm ready to leave, standing at the door. And he says to me, just a minute. You don't smoke, do you? He noticed that. I said, no. Does your husband? I said, oh, on rare occasion, a pipe, but that's easily eliminated. Why? We have an elderly aunt, woman. Her name was Murphy. And she lives alone in a house in Salina. Once in a while, if we're desperate, she has an extra bedroom and bath. Let me call her. He calls her and says, I have this lovely young lady, blah, blah, blah. Will you interview her and her husband? Indeed, she fell in love with my husband. I think I looked a little too sophisticated Eastern for her. I was wearing an elegant fur-trimmed hat that I had made for my trousseau and a fur coat and whatever. But Paul has a way, gentle, lovely way with all ladies, especially the elderly. She truly fell in love with him and rented the room and bath to us with the understanding no meals. I said, fine, there's no problem, Auntie Murphy, whatever I called her. She, 2 days after we were in there, she said to me, of course you're going to have breakfast in my kitchen. And the next day she said to me, you can't wash your hair from my water. You must use my well water. And we became dear friends. We stayed there as long as Paul was there, which was 6 or 8 weeks.
But you were going to mention something about anti-Semitism.
Well, she defended us to her neighbors.
So she was aware that you were Jewish.
She became aware of it. She became aware of it. She was a woman in her 80s. She was an octogenarian. Mm-hmm. No children. And she didn't need to do this. She was a good lady in the heartbelt of America.
Just to digress, you mentioned you had made your own clothes. Were you talented with your hands as
My mother. I designed and mother made. Oh yes. When I was an infant, I'm told that I never wore anything my mother didn't make.
Are you also good with your hands?
My daughter is. I do it up here, at design. I'll show you any number of things. Mm-hmm. I create and then have it translated. I do very modest sewing. I've done needlepoint and sewing, but nothing spectacular. But my mother could do anything with her hands, and my older daughter.
So now we can get back to your husband.
Yes.
He returns from war.
Right.
And what happens then?
We return to Pittsburgh, and Paul's at a crossroads. He knows he wants to pursue his specialty.
Which is?
Which is internal medicine and arthritis and rheumatic disease, though at that point that hadn't been so completely refined. Mm-hmm. I had continued to pay on his practice, which he kept. It's another story.
Well?
It deals with the abuse of women alone, subtle abuse. Paul had rented his office in the West End to a physician from the North Side who had not really ever made it. And when he heard that Paul was going overseas, asked if he could rent and use his space and his files and take over his practice. And they made a loose kind of a legal arrangement. When I returned to Pittsburgh, that was from the time, of course, that we were in Denver and so forth. When I returned to Pittsburgh, 2.5 years later, I was teaching, and one day, on a Friday, I get a telegram from a legal office, saying, the doctor so-and-so demands that I sell him the practice within 48 hours or he will leave. These attorneys were brothers-in-law of this doctor, and I was incensed. They knew my husband was at the front. They knew that we were keeping the office open with the hope and anticipation that he'd come back to it. I was just infuriated. Paul had an attorney that I found rather ineffectual, but I turned to him. I said, what do we do? He said, what do you want to do? Do you want to sell it? I said, absolutely not. I'll pay the rent, and I'll store the equipment. I'll do whatever I have to. This has to be in place for Paul when he comes back if he wants it, if he comes back. And I just couldn't believe, you know, here's the little war wife. Mm-hmm. Make a decision, kid. And they were sure that the decision was going to be buy it. I think so, or they wouldn't have been so. I thought it was a ruthless act. Mm-hmm. I went to that office Saturday after telling them that I would absolutely have none of this. Get out. And don't take anything that belongs to us. And I sat in that office the whole day and then took the keys and then said, you're out of here. Sounds like a comedian's
good
line.
Good for you.
Yes. But, I mean, I was 22. And I couldn't believe this. And I don't think I even told Paul about it. What was I going to write him? He's fighting for his life and jumping. He was a battalion aid surgeon at the front. He went over as supposedly a member of the general hospital unit, limited duty. And then when the casualties at the front were so high, mm-hmm. young physicians were sent over. Right. And he was one of them. So that office was there. When he came back, he practiced there for 6 months and then had an opportunity to do a fellowship at Mass General, but I was pregnant. And he decided he wanted to remain. He was in his 30s. He wanted to remain in Pittsburgh. He was offered an association with the man in rheumatology at that time in Pittsburgh, Dr. Harry Margolis. And my husband was Dr. Margolis's first associate, did the work of four men for 8 years. And after 8 years, when he realized that the association was not going to lead to a partnership, which had been promised in every which way but truth. I would have moved after 3 years, but took Paul longer. That was the time during which I did television and radio. Mm-hmm. Paul went into his own office, which was immediately successful. People followed him, found him. He's the senior in an office of six.
Is he still there today? And this became
Arthritis and Diagnostic Medicine Associates, mm-hmm. exactly. Well, he started in the old Jenkins building. Mm-hmm. He's here at 3500 Fifth Avenue for the last 15 or 18 years.
Wonderful.
But did I answer your question?
Yes, indeed.
And more?
Well, that's all part of this. Your children.
Mm-hmm.
When did the first one arrive?
Donna arrived March the 5th, 1946. She is the mother of three boys. She lives in Woodbridge, Connecticut, which is a community outside of New Haven, with her husband, who is an ophthalmologist, and her three sons, who are her three grandsons. She's gone back to school and gotten her MBA, and she's working.
Fantastic.
Even though she was president of ADASA. Mm-hmm. And honored by Connecticut, active in Federation. She's gone back to the professional route, continues to do lots of community involvement with her boys.
Back mother, back daughter.
A little bit. She's a very, very capable young lady.
And
I think a lot. I'm not being modest. She's not like me in personality. She's her father's daughter.
Reserved, quiet.
But she moves mountains.
Are there other children?
Our younger daughter, Robbie, who is our dancing daughter,
mm-hmm.
has her undergraduate degree from University of Indiana in Bloomington, ballet major, North Carolina School of the Arts, one of the first Jewish kids there, if not the first. Her master's from Columbia in dance education, lives with her husband in New York City. No children, though I think they would like it. She married later. Robbie's had a fascinating career in life, too, and continues to teach. He's a dance, what do they call them, out of the National Endowment for the Arts. She's a dance consultant. She's a artist in schools program. She's one of the participants in the artist in schools program. Has been sent to cities all over the country. Spent a month as the dance educator for the Performing Arts Foundation of the state of Tennessee. She's had a fascinating life.
Could we have both of their married names?
Absolutely. Donna is Donna Kaplan Hirsch, H-E-R-S-H. She's the older girl. Her husband is Dr. Stanley Hirsch, H-E-R-S-H. And she has three sons.
And the other daughter?
Roberta Kaplan Baumgarten, B-A-U-M-G-A-R-T-E-N. Who married a modern Orthodox man and is keeping a strictly kosher home.
Interesting.
Did I spell that too fast? Baumgarten. Baumgarten.
And Kaplan Hirsch, H-E-R-S-H-A?
H-E-R-S-H.
S-H.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's her husband's name.
He's Dr. Stanley, and Baumgarten is George.
George Baumgarten.
George Baumgarten.
Dr. Stanley Hirsch?
Dr. Stanley Hirsch, right. He did his residency and fellowship at Yale, and they loved
Richard,
the area. They settled there.
Richard Baumgarten?
George Baumgarten.
Sorry.
Your first home?
In Pittsburgh?
Yes. Once you settled here, where did you and your husband live?
Our very first rented a little apartment over here on Clyde Street, Oakland.
Back in Oakland.
Exactly.
Right.
Housing was impossible to find. This was 45. And people who live next door to us now were disposing of it was a sublet because he was called to the service. And we got a little tiny apartment with an alcove bedroom, and I knew I was going to have a baby, and we were desperate for space.
Mm-hmm.
Answered an ad in the paper of a professor from Carnegie Tech, I believe, Dr. Jerome Wolkin. Name mean anything to you? At any rate, he and his wife wanted an apartment, a new wife, they were newlyweds, wanted an apartment in Oakland, because he was going to be teaching there, and her father had a house that they would exchange, swap, in East End. We rented on North Sheridan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Moved in, literally I was in my ninth month, and did a great deal to the house and loved having it, and then, contrary to his promise, the landlord put it up for sale within a year. And we knew we weren't going to buy there. It was too small. We didn't like the distance of East End. I really was used to proximity to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Bought on Bartlett Street in Squirrel Hill. And had our one little girl with us then.
And when the second child arrived?
We were still on Bartlett. We lived there for seven years in our own home.
What is
Bartlett.
The age difference between the two?
3 years. 3 years and 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Did you give us their birth dates? I can't remember.
March 5th, 1946 for Donna. And Robbie is June 19th, 1949. I don't think I gave you that for our second daughter.
Donna was
March 5th, 1946. Looking back on those early years, let's say those first 7 years, and your household, would you say it was similar to the kind of home you grew up in? Or do you feel you and your husband had a different atmosphere with your children?
Probably more affluence. I had full-time help. But I was working. So a little different. I wasn't working full-time. I was part-time. And my children were very involved in my work. My first television work, I was able to use my kids. They were on camera with me. That was kind of free form.
So when did you start with your TV work?
When Robbie was a year and a half, let's see. So she was born, June of 49, so it was 1950, literally when television first came to Pittsburgh, local live television, 1950.
So would you say the atmosphere in the home there was not unlike the way you grew up, in the
closeness,
way in which you raised your children?
Closeness, warmth.
Yes.
A tremendous amount of family togetherness.
So
yes.
The similar values.
Yes, yes. My parents were next door. We bought a double house and they were right next door. Mother and daddy were very close. Cousins, first cousins, were always very important. They continue to have family reunions. They're all coming in for my sister's special anniversary on the 4th just to be here.
So you have a lovely extended family.
Yes, extended family, tremendous. These are great nieces and great nephews you see around. Yes, close-knit family.
And your Jewish values were the same, or
the
did
children,
you find you were changing?
Well, the children became part of the Reformed Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say, that wasn't necessarily a plus in terms of the depth of their education. Their friends were there. So socioeconomically, they were in the same grouping.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe the fact that the older girl has gone back to conservative Judaism for her children, and, well, the younger girl, as I said, married a modern Orthodox man and has lived